Okay, so this is like my first sort of Hollywood meeting where I'm 21, 22 years old, and we had a meeting with Whoopi Goldberg, which admittedly is not like Tom Cruise or Brad Pitt, but at the time it was the first time I met someone who had like above the title first dollar gross kind of billing and was on a movie called Sister Act 2. So the guy who was running Disney at the time was this guy, Jeffrey Katzenberg, and he had a very strong thesis that people recommended a movie to their friends based upon the last emotion they felt. So the movie that he saw ends on sort of a sweet note of people, Whoopi saying goodbye to the kids and they all go off after school's over, whatever, right? He's like, it's not the right emotion. You need to leave the audience up and excited and in love with these kids. So he actually funded us to go shoot a music video for the end credits. And we came up with this idea, this sort of Busley Berkeley number, because all the costumes, the monks and the kids and the nuns were all black and white. It was very stark. So we thought, what if he did all these white sets and had the kids dancing around with the monks over a white and sort of thing, right? So the first thing we have to do after we get approval from Disney is go to Whoopi. She is the star of the movie and say, hey, we have this idea. Are you down for this? Da, 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 right? So I'd never met with a star before. We have to kind of kiss the ring and be like, do you like this? How do you do it, right? So we have this meeting and Whoopi comes very professional. On time. She's not one of those like keep you waiting for 2 hours and on time comes in. Let's start the meeting. The director's there, producer's there, I'm there. Da, da, da. And we pitch this thing to her. And we're wondering, is she going to go for this? Or she's like, I don't want to sing. I don't want to dance. She's like, that's a fantastic idea. The kids are going to love it. Da, da, da. And she reaches into her purse and she pulls out a gel. A gel is essentially a cellophane piece that you put over a light. Right, to change the color of the light, right? She pulls out a gel, this sort of peach colored gel, and she said, who's going to be the director of photography, the cinematographer? And Bill Pope, who was shooting as the director, is like, oh, it's going to be, whoever his guy was, right? She's like, give this to him. This is my key light. And I was like, wow, when you get to that point in your career, you're like, let me tell you exactly how to light my skin. This is how I look good wearing this. I was like, that's a pro. That was really impressive. And as I moved along through my career, you started to pick out stars that knew exactly their light, their side, how they worked. And some directors played to that really well. Some directors, not so much. Like if you notice, like Arnold Schwarzenegger, who had a great career for like 20 years, his biggest hits were with Jim Cameron. Because Jim Cameron knew exactly how to write dialogue that Arnold could say. And
Beautiful.
it's just interesting when you see those things. Anyway, so good morning. I'm glad we're all here.
Good morning and welcome. We thought we would grace everyone with that amazing story to introduce our incredible guest today. Welcome to Soroka Speaks, Steve Puri.
Hello. I hope we have some fun, actionable, helpful advice in addition to fun Hollywood stories.
I think that we're going to cover all kinds of things from remote working to leadership to personal life, health challenges, parenting. We've got a good one in store for you all today. So welcome to it. If you're new here, my name is Emily. I'm your host. And again, we're here with our guest, Steve Puri, and my beautiful co-host.
It's Claire.
So
That's
welcome
how I love to
today
do
to
that, Steve.
it. Pretty good. Where shall we
Sorry.
begin? Right.
Well, listen, let's start here, Steve. If somebody, I mean, not to put you on the spot, but if somebody was going to introduce you, what would in a context of, say, a podcast, what might you hope they say about you?
Okay, so let's imagine hypothetically I was going to be on a podcast today. Just stretch your minds, think that happened in my life, right?
Okay.
I would say this. I would.
I can picture it. I can
You're
envision
good.
it.
You have an imagination, right? Exactly.
Yes.
And we're on a spaceship in the past. No, I'm kidding. How big is your imagination? So, what I would say is this: is if I were a listener, I would want to know why the hell should I give this next half hour up of my life while I'm driving at the gym, at home, whatever I'm doing? Am I going to take something away that's interesting and entertaining and also helpful? Right. So. With that in mind, I would say this. There are very few people on Earth who have been a senior executive at multiple motion picture studios and also raised $21 million of venture capital and run a couple tech companies, both successes and failures, right? I happen to be in that small club of people that fit that description. The thing I love talking about, and I so appreciate you asking me on the show, is there are lessons you learn when you move between those fields, those disciplines, about how high performers work, both in producing great work, both in being healthy, understanding how to lead and contribute to remote teams, how to manage being parents, because at a certain point in your career, you're probably midway up the ladder, but then you also have to juggle, I have a husband, wife, I have kids, and how do you continue to manage that in a way that's really helpful? And that's a lot what I talk about. So I hope this is a fun, actionable episode for anyone who cares about that.
We hope so too.
I absolutely love it.
Great fit so far. So I think we're off to a good start. Before we dive into all of that, I'm curious, can you give us a little context as to the difference in working in those two industries? Tell us a little bit about what it was like being in Hollywood as it compares to working in tech.
Okay. So if you look underneath the hood, they are actually very similar, even though they seem dissimilar on their surface, right? Now, let me tell you that. So I worked largely on action movies, which means they're large budgets. You know, they're the things you see promoted with lots of prints and advertising money, you know. And in tech, you have a broad array of things. Everyone maybe is swinging for the fences, trying to create the next Google, ChatGPT, you know, Tesla, whatever it may be, right? They seem very different in that one is all these engineers and designers, you know, the other is all these creative types, you know, with like weird hair and like strange clothing and stuff like that. Here's the fun part that most people don't realize is both of them under the hood are about businesses, right? There's a joke about, you know, it's not show art, it's show business. They are fundamentally people saying, I have a thesis on what would be a huge commercial hit where we're going to spend a whole bunch of money up front, assume we get rapid adoption to pay off this investment. And it's going to be a very popular consumer product. And it is riddled with fear and doubt and uncertainty because everyone around you is trying to do the exact same thing and compete for that mind share. So there are a lot of parallels that people don't think of when they're like, how is Google like Warner Brothers? Well, you know, Google started out like a little film that spent a bunch of money and needed to scale and become this huge behemoth, or Apple, or one of these. So that's been interesting for me, is seeing how those two worlds are similar, not just how they're different.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. And I think it's, you know, we've come, Emily and I have come from the same industry, right? I always say I've grown up in the gaming industry, the gambling industry, because I've been doing it 20 years. And whilst I had jobs before, I never really considered them a career. This is now my career. And this is, you know, the place I consider home is the gambling industry, because it's what I've known for the majority of my working career. And, you know, we've talked about this, about competition, about healthy competition, about wanting to be the best and, you know, deliver the best service and have the best product. So I see a lot of similarities with sort of where Emily and I are in building Soroka, and sort of on a completely different scale, obviously, to multi-million dollar budgets. And Emily and I are, you know, two and a half years in with Soroka. So it's a different scale, but the theories and the mindset is the same. And Emily and I, we work remote. Obviously, Emily's on Vancouver Island. I'm out here in the UK, just outside of London. And we have a couple of other remarkable people working with us. So what is your experience on leading teams from a distance? And is there any sort of learnings that you can share with us around that? Because there is a skill in doing that. There is a skill in building the trust, in making your message heard, even in a digital form, because it's hard to read body language right through the screen and over the phone. You can hear tone of voice, but sometimes it lands differently. So do you have any sort of you can give examples or tips on how to do that effectively and efficiently.
Let's talk about that, because the community that I run now, the Suka company, right, which is about a focus group of people, I've learned a lot in talking with them and also experiments that I've done in the companies that I've run. So I will say this. It is true that for many verticals, many fields, the pandemic was a shock to the system. Oh my God, what's this idea that we're not under the same fluorescent lights for 10 hours a day staring at each other by the water cooler? What? How could this possibly work, right? Okay. Now, here's a funny little secret. Film has been doing remote and hybrid for 100 years. It's not called that. But every film begins with writers writing remotely in their homes, in their writing partner's living room, in coffee shops, right? Hopefully at some point, one of those remote developed scripts turns into something with some interest. You get a little production office. There's a little money behind it. 2 days a week, you're in the production office meeting with costumers, with location scouts. Where should we shoot this? Meeting with line producers. How much will this cost? And then 3 days a week, again, it's all remote. Location scouts are on location working. Writers are at home doing a rewrite for Brad Pitt, you know, sort of thing. Then it's RTO. It is in-person synchronous. You're working all day, all night, on set. It's exhausting. You do it for months at a time. It goes back to being a hybrid with picture editors, sound editors, people working around. You're floating around. And it goes back to remote, right? Now, if you said to someone in film 10 years ago, oh, you're in the remote period of this movie, people would be like, what are you talking about? You know, it's like, you're in development, you're in pre-production, you're in prep. You know, these are the words that are used there. But what's interesting is leaders, as well as individual contributors, have established ways of working in those periods, right? That is not inorganic to the system. That is the system. In other verticals, it was like, how the hell do we do this, right? So what I think for many managers, many leaders in other verticals, when we went into the pandemic, it was almost as if on their color palette, they had reds and yellows, and they knew how to paint sunsets and, you know, sunrises and stuff for their team. And then suddenly remote and hybrid was forced upon them. It was almost like someone put blue onto their color palette. Oh, well, you know what? You can paint a lake now. You can paint a sky. Okay. So it adds a color to the palette. Does it mean that everything needs to be a lake? No, it doesn't. But it gives you that ability to say, oh, now I can choose, hopefully authentically and hopefully intelligently, what works best for this. So let me give you some very interesting, hopefully interesting to me, hopefully interesting to others, examples of this, right? So there are things that are wonderful to do synchronously in person. I've never been on a Zoom, a Google Meet, you know, that was about creative collaboration that felt as good as being in the room, right? Whether you were talking about, okay, it's the end of the second act, the hero, she has the sword, the dragon's in the next cave, what do we do? And there's something about just being in the energy of like three people around a whiteboard being like, well, you know, she did have the arrow in the last, you know, like sort of thing. And it just feels good. Or you're talking about, you know, user flows. You're designing, you know, in Figma or whatever. And you're all kind of around drawing on the whiteboard. What if the screen looked like this, right? Flat out. Maybe someone has done that. I have never seen that energy conveyed through a Google Meet as well, right? Mm-hmm. Now, Cal Newport would be proud for me to say this. And by the way, anything I say is probably from reading Mihai's book on flow, Cal Newport's work, I mean, Near, James Clear. These are the people who have spent tons of time thinking about this, and we get to stand on their shoulders. Thank God for them, right? And when you think about deep work and you say, there's a day part that is, got to return the emails. My colleague slacked me. I got to do the TPS report. You don't want it for this, right? Annoying, distracted, kind of shallow work. And then there's the deep work where hopefully at the end of that hour, 2 hours of real thinking, you walk into the staff meeting, you say this thing, Irvin goes, oh my God, that changes like the course of what we're doing. Like that changes the trajectory of our company. We should do that. And that doesn't really come from 15 minutes between Zooms being like, let me have a great idea. You know what I mean? It really comes from having that time to let your mind go and do interesting things. So the really long answer, and I hope people are still listening, right, is I think the spectrum of colors that we have on our palate now as leaders and as ICs has expanded. And there is a generation, an older generation, that only understands that post-industrial revolution. Hey, man, you go to the factory and you punch in at 8 a.m. and you punch out at 7, and that is work. And it's really hard when you're like 50, 60 years old to sort of break that idea of that's what work is. But if you're 20-something right now, you're starting to understand that work can be measured by the effect of what you did, not where you did it or when. And I think that's a really powerful thing that's going to change the next 5-10 years as some people do retire or move on. And there's a new generation of leaders that go, listen, Claire, I don't care if you thought of that in 15 minutes at the beach yesterday. When you sat in the staff meeting, everyone sat up, was like, let's all run from this room and go do that now. Stop talking. Let's do that. Right.
Yeah.
I don't care where you did it. I just want to win. I want our team to win. Right. So that's what I think is interesting. And we can talk more about creativity. I know you guys have a lot of things you want to probe at, but that's kind of how I feel about those things.
Yeah, I think that's super interesting because as you know, we've come out of the pandemic now, there are a lot of organizations that are, you know, instituting hybrid or even like mandating back in the office. And I just think it's so fascinating to look at the culture of different organizations, the, you know, default leadership styles of different executive teams and where these decisions may be derived from. What do you think, Steve, is a misconception around remote work that perhaps some of these, you know, executive teams or leaders have bought into or maybe the opposite? What do you think are some of the risks that they're not willing to take or to mitigate in their sort of instituting? Because I agree with you.
Okay.
You know, sorry for the tangent, but I absolutely agree. It's like, you know, we need to continue to develop environments for people to do their work autonomously and for them to be so inspired, enrolled, engaged in what they're doing that they want to do a good job, whether they're sitting by the pool or, you know, in a WeWork in Dubai, you know, wherever it is. So, I mean, that's my view. That's my perspective.
I love that you embedded the answer in your question.
Okay, but this
have
is
you ever
my,
thought
my,
about 2
my
plus
opinion.
2? 4 is an answer, but there are other answers, but 4 is a good one. That's really good. No, let me pick up
okay,
on your
this is
question,
my opinion, but
Emily.
I want to know from you. It sounds like we're on the same page, but what do you tell these people that have potentially, you know, what do you think is the misconception they're potentially buying into, or what's the work that they need to do as a leadership team, or the realizations that they need to come to perhaps foster a more inclusive environment when it comes to remote?
It's a short answer. I'll make it long because I like to talk, but it's a short answer, which is, yes, you're right. There's a lot of fear and uncertainty among a certain kind of leader where it's like, I can't see Emily. She didn't come in today. She's working at home. Is she really at home? Is she really working? Is she doing the laundry? Right? And here's the thing. That's not really a problem with remote work. That is a problem with hiring. If you are a leader, like truly a leader of an organization, there are 2 main things you do. There's some small things, approve budgets and improve hiring, things like that. But you set a vision. We're here to cure cancer. You set a style. This is how we treat each other. This is how we treat our customers. This is how we treat our competitors. That comes from you and no one else.
I agree.
And if you hire, if I know Claire's here and like, her dad died of cancer and we're working on curing cancer. I don't really worry when she's at home, whether she's screwing around, because she is engaged with the mission. She's like, if I can make a dent in this, that's a good use of my lifetime. Right. Mm-hmm. And if you hire someone who's just like, hey man, you know, I've had 5 jobs. I found you on Indeed. I'll be here for 6 months. That's a hiring problem. It's not a remote work problem.
Yeah. I 100% agree with that. And actually I was talking about that recently. I was interviewed for a podcast about my career, not to make this all about me, but we were talking about, it's all about Claire. We were talking about how I had hired team members in the past. And I said, I look beyond the CV as well. I look way into their socials, into their private life. Who are they as people? What are their drivers? What are their ambitions? What are their goals? You know, I go beyond just the skill set because, yeah, go on, Steven.
Oh, no. When you were done, when you're done.
Yeah, so I go beyond their skill set because I feel like there are certain, you can teach somebody to how to improve writing skills, right? You can teach someone how to improve presentation skills and graphic design and how to be, go back to school and take a course on accounting, for example. But you can't teach someone how to be driven. You can't teach someone how to, you can help guide as a leader and you can inspire, but you have to look for the qualities that fit your team. And it's particularly within the remote work, you want them people that you can trust, that you know are on board with your vision. You know they're on board with, I want to come to the remote office every day. I want to show up and be a great team member. And I really want to see the company succeed. And I want my team to be awesome. And my role within that is to be awesome as part of this bigger vision. And so I really resonated with everything you said. And I think, it is part of the hiring process and potentially problem. You've got the wrong people in the wrong roles, or they're not, you haven't, like you said about leadership, that you have not got them on board with your vision and what you're trying to achieve within the company. And that's where the downfall is, in my opinion. And obviously, it aligns a lot with what you said, Stephen.
I would love to pick up on two parts of what you said. I agree with you. There's a point in time in which peeping someone's socials, doing some social networking, was revealing. Everyone's socials, I think, now are faked. It is a version of your life that you are absolutely aware. Where we're in a post like truth era in social, it's now this is my social media version of me. It's not actually me anymore, right? So I don't find that valuable as maybe like 10, 15 years ago it was. But I'll tell you something I've found, and you can't do this all the time, it takes time. But for important hires, there's something that I do, which is let's go do an activity together that I know you don't do well. So come to yoga with me. Let's go for a hike together. Let's do something. And it is interesting to see how people respond when they're out of the usual like interview of like, so Claire, I saw you were at Instagram for 4 years. What was that like? Oh, what was your biggest win there? What's a personal challenge you face? You know what I mean? Like everyone has the
Love
canned
that.
answers to that stuff. But you go hiking with someone who's like struggling with it, or you go do yoga, or you do whatever, go to the, Top Golf or something like that. Man, that's revealing. When they don't hit that ball well, hard to fake that.
Love
I just
that.
had the thought, oh, you should drive around with people, do your interviews in cars, make them drive. Do you know how it's like I see different personalities come out of
Yes.
people behind the wheel all the time.
Oh my
It's like
God.
the road rage and the getting to be right and the,
Completely
dehumanizing
agreed.
the other humans
Yeah.
and how dumb all the other drivers are. I see like personalities literally morph behind the wheel. This is hilarious. I'm
Emily,
like the
spot
next
on.
right?
Spot on.
The
And by the
next
way,
interview is
when
going to
they
be in the
drive
car and
you,
you're driving. You got a license?
it's true. When they drive you to the restaurant, how they treat the valet at the restaurant, way more telling than how they treat
100%.
you.
100%. Always. I did that. That this is key in my dating life too. 100%. I'm serious,
Insightful.
man.
Okay, noted.
You learn a lot about people in these situations. It's like you'd be
Yes.
all niceties, and then you're in a traffic jam and let that real personality come out, You
Yep.
finding joy in the moment, or are you like, yeah, or not? So interesting. So,
Love
okay,
that.
I want to shift gears a little bit, if that's okay. And we're kind of all over the map in no chronological order of our
I love we're talking
subjects.
about driving. You want to shift gears, and we're all over the map. This is cohesive. This is good.
I know
I'm going to take
this
a
is
back seat.
where I this okay, there you go. Well, I'm going to take the wheel for a moment, and then I'm going to pass the wheel back over to you, Steve. But with your permission, we are going to talk about some like real. Not that business isn't real and remote working isn't real. But I think there's something really fascinating about you and your this point in time in your life. And I think there's probably some wisdom and some insight and some compassion and some humanity available for all of us in your story. And that is that right now you're on the cusp of becoming a father for the first time.
True.
Yes, congratulations. And you're also battling cancer. And I was wondering if you might share a little of, you know, the dichotomy of life and the polarity of life as it presents itself sometimes, and what it might be like walking in your shoes these days. Any insight you might be willing to share with us or let us in that capacity at all?
Well, I have an amazing partner. I don't like kids. Never wanted to have kids.
Brace yourself.
No, never wanted to have kids. And we've been together 10 years, and I had a moment one day when I was like, you know what? The world would be better if there were little versions of you. And my entire attitude about having children changed when I was like, oh, that's what it is. And I'm super excited. You're right. This November, I assume this will air before November. This November, yeah. You know, if the universe smiles, we will have a son. And I'm super excited about it in a way in which I never thought I would be. And I suddenly have wrapped my head around that idea of like a little guy that you can help, you know, launch his life into the world, you know, and hopefully have a daughter in a year and a half, 2 years. So it's super meaningful to me. Definitely a good part of why I'm here today with you is I've been thinking about at some point my kids are going to be old enough to have that what does daddy do or what did daddy do kind of moment. And I don't know that the Wolverine or Die Hard 5 or some of these movies are like, they're fun. People love talking about them. They're great stories. They're big outsized personalities involved, you know, so it's really fun to talk about. But I don't know if they moved the world in a meaningful way. And a lot of what I'm doing now to help people do something. Like I have a very strong thesis that we all have something great inside us. And the question of this lifetime is, are you going to get it out or not? And there are very strong, well-funded forces to make sure you don't do anything with your life. You know, if you guys were engineers, designers, behavioral psychologists, the best paycheck you could get right now is to go to work for a company whose business model is steal your life, period, full stop. And that is incredibly hard to consider when you're like, wow, man, this phone in my hand feels so fun to scroll and just the dopamine hits keep coming. Do I really want to get off the sofa and go do something hard, try and create something new? You know, write the next great American novel. A British novel, Canadian novel, you know, that's meaningful to me. And I would love for my kids to look what daddy did is not be like, oh, he helped make the Wolverine, you know, one of 1,000 people that did that. It is rather, you know what? He helped 1,000 people actually write that book that was inside them or create that company or that website or that, whatever that thing is that you have inside. There are enough really smart, well-funded people working to make sure that you just give your life to them so they can sell it to an advertiser and keep the money. So that's meaningful to me. And I'd like to, I know this is kind of a silly reframing, but I'd like to not say battling cancer as much as I've been diagnosed. It's being managed. It's something I'm being very positive about. I think I found really smart people now. I've moved to MD Anderson and they seem to have a really great grasp of this. So I'm much more optimistic about that. I'm having kids. Laura and I approach this in a very healthy way. And you know what? At the end of the day, the universe is going to have what it wants, but I'm sure trying to put my finger on the side of the scale of like, I'm going to be around for high school graduation, college graduation, and, you know, see my kids do silly shit and fall off their bikes and skin their knees, you know? So that's what I'm pushing for. But thanks for bringing that up. I don't talk about that a lot.
I really appreciate the invitation to reframe the battling. I thank you so much for that humbling feedback because I feel like sometimes that's just like what we hear or the way it's positioned. And you're right. It was like, even when I said that, it was like an unconscious frame of, you know, something that you, you know, are contending with or being with right now.
A lot of that comes from Laura. She's an incredibly positive person and she's a great ability to manifest things. And I watch her do that and I'm like, okay. You know, it's like watching Michael Jordan on the court. You're like, okay, how can I pick up those moves? Yeah. And she's just like, we're going to focus on this. This is what's going to happen. We're going to move toward that and, you know, be smart. So what I eat, I don't drink alcohol. I don't, smoke. I don't do a lot of things like that. And, it's just putting my finger on one side of the scale. I'm not going to determine the outcome, but I'm going to make it clear to the universe what it is I would like to see happen.
And yeah, I mean, all we can really do with this one precious life is live fully, be the greatest expression of who we are and the opportunity that we have to be that greatest expression.
That is why I am doing what I don't collect a paycheck, nor does Tony, my partner in Suka. Like, we do this because we're like, this we think is important in the world. Like, people should go to bed at night feeling like I've moved my life forward. I've done something I'm proud of. Maybe my kids or my family or my friends are proud of, as opposed to, hey man, I watched some dancing monkey videos that were really fun. Great. Yeah. At
All
60,
down
you're not really going to care about that.
too much of that happening these days, in my opinion. Let's talk about Suka for a moment.
Okay,
Tell us a
here we
little
go.
bit about the name. It points to some form of, joy or ease. Tell us a little bit about the
Oh,
name, where it
someone
came
has the
from.
Google. You
Well,
paid your
the
Google
internet
bill
is a
this month.
powerful tool, the internet. I had no idea, so I was curious to see what it was, if it was a name, as is Soroka, or if there's a story behind it. And so I'm going to deduce that perhaps there's a bit of a story. Is that correct?
There is a story, and it actually involves Laura, my wife, whom I mentioned. And there was a moment, I should mention, Laura and I met in yoga. We were living in Manhattan. I married the girl on the mat to my left, straight up,
Beautiful.
right? So yoga is a part of our life. We have a daily yoga practice. It's awesome. I love it. I love the spiritual and the physical kind of like combined. And it's hard enough that my mind doesn't really float around too much. It's like it really needs to stay like present and intentional. So that said, that little setup, as we would say, when Laura and I got married, we went on our honeymoon in Bali. Great place for yoga. Go to the yoga barn, bump into friends, the whole thing, right? So on the way there, I said, Laura, we have a working title for what I'm doing, this like focus, this flow state app. And I really want to have a name that's great. That's better than like Flow State App 14 or Distraction Blocker 9. Amazon. It's not really like bookseller, Nike's not really like shoe company, right? So maybe, in the next 10 days while we're gone, back of my mind will come up with something. She was like, great. I hope you have that moment. So when we got there, I said, do you mind today if I talk to maybe three people from our community and just ask them 10 minutes, can you tell me what you love about this? Because that might seed my unconscious mind and over 10 days it'll bubble up like, oh, here's the word, right? She's like, go for it. I'm going to the pool. I will see you at dinner, my friend, right? So I posted in the group chat. I was like, hey, who has 10 minutes to talk to me about this? Three people did. Ask them, usual questions. Oh, do you love the flow music? Do you love the smart assistant? What's the thing you love? The third guy was going to the wrap up where you're like, hey, Claire, I asked for 10 minutes. We've been doing this for 8 minutes. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. And the guy said, he's still a member. I see him in there. He said to me, Stephen, you asked the wrong questions. And I was like, okay, got you. What was the right question? And he said, you should have asked me why I pay you. And I said, it's like 30 cents a day. Like, it's as cheap as we can make it and still break even. So I didn't think that was a big deal, but okay, why do you pay me? And he said, I find I have two kinds of days. At 3 o'clock, I can be playing with my kids. They're 2 and 4. Or at 6 o'clock, I can be down to myself and feel like, man, where did the day go? I'm gonna have to get up early tomorrow morning, try and finish today's stuff before tomorrow's stuff. And it just doesn't feel good. And I found the difference is, did I open Suka in the morning and have it guide me through my morning? So I pay you because my kids are not going to be 2 and 4 forever.
Wow.
And I was like,
Beautiful.
I
Good
went to dinner
answer.
with Laura. I was like, I spoke to this dude today who's more articulate about my company than I am. Like, let me tell you what he said, right? And she's like, yeah, that's really like, that's emotional and good and like really clear. It's not like Flow State App 12, right? So I was like, I don't know how it turns into a name, but like, man, that resonated with me, right? So we're going to bed. She's brushing her little teeth. I'm brushing my little teeth. And she looks at me. She goes, in yoga, we hear all these like term prana, karma, dharma, all these Sanskrit words. She's like, the universe spoke to you. That guy basically said, Suka, said, here, is that feeling of like happiness, of self-fulfillment when you are doing something, you're good at it, you're in your lane, and you can do it with ease. And I pulled out my phone, and from bed, I looked up to see, is the Suka company, the happiness company, available? I bought the domain, and that was it. Done.
Beautiful. Wow. That's so
there's
great.
Your answer, Emily. What else would you like to know?
How do you think it shows up in the work that you do? Like, how do you think that, you know, like, how is it representative of some of your values or, you know, the leadership skills or qualities that you hold dear?
Well, something that I noticed is this, and this maybe will involve a little bit of a film story, and then I'll bring it back to something more tangible for us, right? In that I noticed in film, there were some writers I worked with in particular in the $1 million club. Like, these are the guys and girls that like get $1 to $2 million a script, right? Most studio films at some point get their fingerprints on it. And they had very specific like techniques of working. Like, I don't know if you ever watched like a golfer before they hit the ball, like at a certain level pro, they have a very specific sort of way of preparing because they need to ball 300 yards with like 2 inches of accuracy, right? So some things I noticed were mental spaces. For example, some of the writers that I worked with, they would go to a very specific place, sometimes not even in their home. Sometimes they would go to hotel rooms. They would go to like Roland and Dean, who wrote Independence Day and Godzilla and all that. They went to a villa in Puerto Vallarta, and they had a very specific writing process of like, when we get in this room, the light in the morning comes in over the pool, da, 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 it gets us to this mental place. And we don't think about casting. We don't think about, we got to go raise money for this. We don't have to think about when will we shoot it and what production date. We just get in that zone of like, oh, what should the character do next? And that was very interesting to see how they trained their minds, these little like mental tricks to like cue the mind to go, you know, we're in writing mode, you know? And like Roland and Dean went down to that house in Puerto Vallarta, rented it for 6 weeks, came back with the script that at the time was the third highest grossing movie in film history, right? So there's something to that. And the same thing with Alex Kurtz and Bob Worsley, with whom I worked at DreamWorks, you know, Star Trek 11, Transformers 1 and 2, Zorro, The Island, Mission Impossible 3, like all these like huge movies. They've written tens of billions of dollars of box office. For them, it was much more a hotel room, which evoked, I think, dorm room for them because they met back in school. And I think that brought them to that place of like, we're these scrappy young guys who are going to write great movies someday. You know, even $10 billion of box office later, they still had that thing of like Alex sitting on the edge of the bed with his laptop and Bob sitting at the little desk and writing away because it evoked that dorm room kind of thing. So mental spaces, I think, are very interesting. I think understanding time of day. There's a famous screenwriter, Ron Bass, who wrote like Best Friend's Wedding and Rain Man and all this stuff. And, you know, he's written the characters that like Julia Roberts says yes to. Tom Cruise, Dustin Hoffman, like people who have stacks of $10, $20 million offers on their desk. They get to choose anything they want. And they go, that guy's words. Like, these are the words I want to say. That's the character I want to play. Reserve my spring slot. Right? So he famously didn't talk to his family in the morning. He understood his chronotype, like the day parts where his brain worked a certain way. And he had to deal with them. He's like, listen, daddy's not going to ask you like what you want for breakfast, cereal, pancakes, you know, not going to say hello to his wife. He's like, by the time I interact with you, I can't hear my character's voices in my head. So I need that time. That is my dialogue where I can actually write these words that sound like Julia would say them. And then that was very interesting way of, I'd never encountered someone who's that specific about like, this is how my brain works. And I just need to respect it, you know? So in terms of what I do now, yes, I make a website that helps people get into a flow state. My hope is that the people who want to do something with their life come and find it. And 5 years from now, I'll hear, oh, you know what? I wrote this best-selling book thanks to this. I created this new company thanks to this. I did whatever it is. Maybe I just manage the middle part of my career when I suddenly have kids to watch out for, but I'm still working my way up the ladder because I use this for 2 hours a day and I got the deep work done. The kind of work where I walk into the staff meeting and people are like, wow, that idea, you know, as opposed to I returned a lot of emails. No one cares.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what's up. With some fun Hollywood stories stuck in the middle. How about that?
I love that. Thank you so much. And I think it is, I'm actually, well, I've got a call after this podcast, I'm not going to lie. But as soon as I'm done with that, I'm like, I am getting on the site and downloading this, because I personally, and I'm sure lots of listeners do, find it really, really hard to get into that that mindset, right? I can't do yoga. I go to classes. It's like, oh, let's do mindfulness. I'm like, what? You want a quiet? What's going on in here? I'm like, I need to be asleep. And even then I'm dreaming. So it's, you know, I think, yeah, we need
Let me share something about that, which is there's a lot of research that to get into a flow state, there are many conditions precedent that help you, right? Mm-hmm. But there's also a lot of research that says, it takes 15 to 25 minutes to get in, right? You have to actually sit down and focus on this. For example, like if you come to my website and you hit play and you leave in 2 minutes, you'll be like, I don't know, some music played. I don't get what it is. You have to actually come with an intention of saying like, oh, you know what? I want to write chapter one of my book, or I want to revise these designs for my website. I want to work on my business plan for an hour and not just like shuffle words around, but actually go, you know how I could market this? And that comes from giving yourself time. So the research says it takes you 15 to 25 minutes just to get into that magical place.
Yeah.
And if you get interrupted in the middle, if Emily's like slacking you halfway through, it takes you another 15 to 25 to get back in once you've been pulled out to go, hey, could you send me a link to that TPS report, whatever it is, right? So really important thing is you have to come with an intention of at least half an hour and probably an hour or two. In my first flow state, I didn't know what a flow state was. I was on a flight here from Austin, you know, where Laura and I live, to San Francisco. And I had some designs I needed to do to illustrate an idea for my team. And I remember the flight took off. I think it was Alaska. And it landed like 10 minutes later. And I was like, oh my God, something, the engine fell off. They don't want to tell us. We're in Dallas, Fort Worth. Like over 3 hours had gone by. I had absolutely no concept of that. I don't know if the drink cart came by. I didn't go to the bathroom. But my designs were done. You know what it was? Is there was no Wi-Fi. The Wi-Fi was broken on that flight. There was no incoming Slack, no emails, no way for me to be distracted with like, oh, let me just look at, you know, Instagram or Facebook or CNN, whatever, for 5 minutes. Nothing. And instead of getting to SF and be like, let me race to the hotel, finish the designs before I meet with the team in the morning. And I was like, the designs are done. Like, there's a great New England lobster roll place right by SFO. I could go there and just have a lobster roll and be like, great, let's go meet in the morning. So that I realized later was a flow state. I didn't know what it was, but it was kind of magical, like, man, I feel great. And like, I'm done for the night. So that's what I want to offer people. It takes, you know, a few minutes. Like you said, you can't drop in. I'm going to flow for 15 minutes. There is no such thing. The website will seem stupid. Yeah. But if you block an hour or two, at the end of that hour or two, you're going to look up and go, oh my God, how do you do that again?
And come with intention, right? So block off the time and then come with intention is the most...
That is it.
Yeah, powerful way of showing up. Yeah, I love that. Thank you for sharing that with us and with the listeners as well, so that they understand it's not a quick fix. It's not something you can just rock up and give up after a few minutes. Like you said, just listen to the music and be like, oh, what am I doing here?
Right. I can listen to YouTube music. Okay, cool. Do it. You know? And honestly, you don't even need to use our website. If you find a way to get in your flow state, do it. Do something that moves the world forward. In your life, however it is, I do it hanging upside down, you know, listening to hard rock. Do it. If that's your jam, get there.
Yeah.
Do you?
That's your joy is your purpose.
Right?
Yeah. Can I just have one more question around this point? Because I am
you have to pay.
So
there's a little, there's a PayPal at the bottom of the screen.
Yep. PayPal incoming. And you touched on this a little bit earlier as well about, you know, I forget the guy's name, I'm sorry, that was writing for the characters, you know, for
there's Ron Bass.
Yes, Ron Bass, and how he wouldn't talk to his kids in the morning. I don't, I want to know, you know, in your personal experience, like his personal experience is, I perform best in the morning. So I'm going to kind of get my kids off to school, daycare, and then I'm in the zone. And some people are night people. I know my husband he thinks better in the day. If I ask him something at, I mean, I can't ask him at 9 a.m. He's always asleep. But, you know, even at 10 a.m. when he's up and getting his day started, if I want to have, you know, a conversation and get a lot of decisions done, it's not the best time for him. 10 a.m. is not his time. You know, 10 p.m., he's coming at me with all these ideas and all this stuff that we need to do and we need to organize and let's plan, you know, a 2-week trip in the U.S. and da-da-da. So, you know, I just kind of want to know if you've found, is there like a secret sauce or a magic, you know, time of day, or is it really people have to hone and listen to what works best for them, their body, their mind, body and soul, you know, and just honor that.
You guys are really good at embedding the answers in your questions. Really,
I already wrote down circadian rhythm as it relates to remote work as like the
exactly
point that
right.
I wanted to and highlight. And this is like that autonomy and trust. But take
this is
course
perfect.
Here.
Yeah. So yes, Claire, what you're saying, know thine self, right?
Yeah.
And hopefully as an individual contributor, which many of us are in some ways, you get to know like, oh, you know what? I'm an engineer. I do meetings during the day and at night I'm in the zone and that's when I do my coding. Da, da, da. Or maybe like, for example, I realize I work best when like 5 a.m. I go to the gym or yoga and then I have like 3 hours of incredible clarity. I'm not really good on Zooms. I'm not really good at interactive stuff, but I'm really good at saying, let me go deep. And then I feel good the rest of the day and I can do all the interactive lightweight stuff because I'm like, oh, I got that done. And I sent it off. Whoever needed that slide deck design Figma thing, whatever, it's done. So it is know thyself. And then as a leader, it's, and this is sophisticated, but it's knowing that. It's when, you know, you look at Emily and you go, actually, to get Emily to do that thing that like moves our company forward, she does need 2 days at home where I just don't bug her because I trust her, because I know she also wants to cure cancer. And it's just, Emily, why don't you take Thursday, Friday, and can you just think about this stuff and we'll talk on Monday? And that comes from trust. It comes from good hiring. And it comes from knowing Emily. And she may also be someone who's like, her best ideas are in the room around a whiteboard. And it's like, you know what, to get the best out of Emily, Friday, let's just book 2 hours with Stephen and myself and Emily in a room. And that's, you just, as a leader, hopefully, you know, someone who understands people. If you just have an emotional intelligence, you can sort of go, get it. This is how they work.
I love it. People often will say, and I got this one from my dad, what kind of industries do you work in? What kind of companies do you work with? The ones with people in them. That's what we do. There are a few distinctions that I'm going to share that sort of wrap up this conversation and sort of what we have been talking about. The first I'm going to name is Gay Hendricks' Zones of Flow. If you're not familiar with them, check it out. There's 4 of them. What Stephen often referred to in this podcast was ideally what we call the zone of genius, which is where you are essentially perhaps at ease a little bit or in some joy, but you are operating in a state where you're good at what you do, you enjoy doing it, but there's a healthy level of challenge or friction that keeps you engaged and moving forward and learning and growing. We also talked about the ability of setting the container. So really being able, while we didn't name it like this, but the ability to set in where change, transformation, a project, a task has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And when we can identify and set that container, we can create some incredible success within it. I wanted to mention the circadian rhythms as it relates to remote working and really and truly cultivating environments for our team to be able to execute and practice who they are as genius and brilliant in the world, cultivating those environments, setting those containers where we can get the best out of people in that way. And that definitely involves knowing our circadian rhythm. I believe Suka in itself is just a testament to zone of genius. So thank you for that. And really leaving everyone perhaps on the note of multitasking is a myth. There is not a shred of evidence that suggests that this is beneficial for you. So if you want to really, you know, perform better or accomplish more, consider what monotasking might look like. And perhaps Suka can help you do that.
You do a whole episode on just that.
I love it. Thank you so much for joining us. It was a pleasure to spend this time with you today. Really appreciate you contributing.
We will see you all next time. For those listening, thank you.
Thank you again.
Bye.
Thanks so much. We'll see you next time. Ciao, ciao.